Reports, and you've got several information items.
I do, and I will go through the first five very quickly. In fact, you've already heard from Dean on the regional campus enrollments report, so we won't need to reiterate that one. But on the first four, don't know that there's a need to elaborate, but I want to share information with you as we study it, and most everything eventually comes back to data, and how does data drive your decisions and your anticipation of needs. I asked Howard to put a chart together of our residence halls, how they break down with freshmen and upperclassmen, and the totals in each residence halls, and again, just so you have a profile with nearly 4,800 students living in our residence halls. This gives you a pretty good profile of where they are and what classifications per residence hall.
Howard, any some information that we got out just last night today?
Okay, good. Please.
Dr. Persons was indicating this morning that a good bit of our growth is retention. And retention in resident hall always very significant and important to us. I asked Housing and Resident Life to give us some information on the spring how our numbers are paying out. And we've done extremely well in retaining students. And many times when those students reach that have completed that sophomore year or midway through that junior year is when they start thinking about moving off campus, looking for a different lifestyle. And our numbers, our spring numbers, are very strong. Show that we've got a slight increase, and that we will, as we expand our housing portfolio, we will be building housing that will be attractive to the junior, senior, and graduate students. These numbers, I just wanted to take a second to share with you that we too have seen good, solid numbers in this part.
Any questions for Howard on the profile of residence hall occupancy?
Looks like the withdrawals are going down some.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. And as Dr. Caleb mentioned this morning, there has been a significant shift in terms of the students that are leaving or being removed from the university for poor academics. And those numbers, we see some of those. We knew we were going to see several of those in the spring, but our incoming students more than compensate for that.
And we need to keep an occupancy of above 90% in order to ensure that the Student Life Foundation remains financially strong.
Yes.
In its financial obligations to the debt to renovate our residence halls over the last several years. Good. Thank you, Howard.
All right.
Actually, I do not have a copy in front of me, but I believe in your packet you have the sustainability report.
We do.
That Julia is holding up. Don't need to go through that, but you all have that in a very impressive document. I'm just really proud of what our sustainability committee is doing. Christian Ryan Downing is over there. Stand up, Christian. Christian chairs this committee and is our university officer who coordinates our sustainability programs, obviously working closely with a lot of people across campus, including faculty and folks in facilities on John Osborne's staff and our energy department, and all that has to be done from both a behavioral modification standpoint and a conservation standpoint. This is a terrific snapshot, really, after the first full year of operation for our sustainability program. Kristen, anything you'd like to add to this?
Thank you.
You sure? All right. But great work. And I'll speak more to this in a moment in our planning document that I'll address in a moment. But terrific work. The next... The next thing, I was presented this report, And sometimes as board members, it's impossible for you to have a sense of all the various elements that goes into a campus and things you need to consider. But one of the things that's very important to me is to nurture those things that make WKU distinctive. On my watch, I view it as a major responsibility not to allow our university to be homogenized and be like other universities, because institutions have personalities and they're defined by lots of different things, and we need to nurture those things that make us distinctive in order to keep the very numbers that Dean Kaler and his staff are producing from an enrollment standpoint and from a retention standpoint and all the things that go into degree productivity. You start with your base, and that base has to constantly be growing and expanding, and then you move into retention and graduation. But the place and our campus and the things that make us distinctive, in large measure, based on what we hear in all the studies we do, is huge in helping us continue to grow our number of students and the quality of those students. Okay, one of those things that is unique about this campus are our trees. And so I ask for, I don't want to see an inventory, because over time, it's been my observation, because of drought and because of lots of things, we are losing some trees. I don't want to wake up one day and find that the character of this campus has somehow changed, and probably not for the better. I'm pretty impressed with this handout that you see here of our tree inventory, and you look at the different sheets, and you can see the diameter of the trees, how they're measured, the maintenance plan, the replacement plan, trees to be replaced, trees we're monitoring, gaps in the tree inventory, just on and on. A lot of data, because these things don't happen by accident. And we've got a great group of individuals in our facilities department, John, and with our grounds crew, that monitors these kinds of things. I just thought you might get a kick out of seeing a few things happen by accident. And the character of our campus is one of those things that must be sustained, but it has to be thought out and thoughtful and long range in context. A little more information than you might normally like or seek to have about your university, but the trees, in large measure, in the minds of a lot of people, are very important in defining our distinctiveness.
215 new trees, three-quarters of them will be hardwood trees, and about 25% will be flowering trees. And the whole project's about $30,000.
But huge in terms of the character defining aspect of that in our campus. So a lot of detail about trees there, our tree inventory. You hear a lot about athletics. We talk a lot about athletics. Athletics gets a lot of attention, and there's a sports section in every paper. We all know all of that. What fails to often get recognized is the academic performance of our student athletes. And so Wood and his staff report to me on a regular basis on the academic dimensions of our athletic program. And so, again, I wanted the board to, you read all about the athletic on the field, on court, in the pool, on the track performance of our student athletes, which is performing at a high level when you consider all 19 of our athletic programs. What you may not read about as much, because it doesn't make as much splash, is the academic performance. And our student athletes are performing at a very high level academically, at a rate that significantly exceeds the non-athletic student average across campus. But this is some information that might be helpful to you in terms of academic performance and ACT averages and other data as it relates to our student athletes who are performing above a 3.0 average. And in fact, cumulative averages are at that level and above. What, any thoughts to add to this?
I just have our fall report from fall semester. The number one major for WKU student athletes, don't know if anybody's aware of what our athletes are majoring in, but the number one major of our 412 student athletes who've declared a major, They're in the Gordon Ford College of Business. We have 58 student athletes majoring in business. That's our number one major. We have 30 biology majors within WKU Athletics. So I just thought to define kind of what a lot of our athletes are taking, that would be helpful. This past fall semester, 52%, 213 WKU student athletes earned a 3.0 or better. So 52% were better than 3.0. We had, that's broken out among 3.0 to 3.5. We had 112 of our student athletes had a 3.5 or better. So over 25% of our student athletes had a 3.5 or better. We had 47 student athletes earn a 4.0 last semester. So 11.5% of all student athletes at WKU earned a 4.0 last semester, which is a tremendous percent. So we're just very thankful that our coaches are recruiting the right kind of students from high school, and then we're establishing a culture of academic expectations within athletics, and also getting a lot of help from the WKU faculty along the way to help ensure that our student athletes stay on track.
Again, information that's helpful to you as you leave these meetings with some sense of a snapshot of things you might not normally have come across your desk. I want to turn our attention now to, by the way, you do have the latest Honors College booklet in your package of materials. No specific information on that, but the Honors College continues to be a defining element for us, particularly as we focus on strengthening academic quality. But you have this document right here in your packet, and some of you that are new on the board, let me put in context our current strategic plan. For the last 12-plus years, we implemented a strategic planning process in the spring of 1998 that was very empirically measured in its goals, objectives, and performance indicators. And since that time, every year we have produced a report card that statistically measures progress on each of the performance indicators that we went on record as saying we would achieve in the life of that strategic plan, which typically has been a five-year strategic plan. And we continue to do that. About every 3 or 4 years, we have updated that strategic plan and retired the successes and the achievements of statistical measures we said we would achieve and replaced them with statistical measures that were relevant to that particular point in time. And we've done that over the course of the last dozen years. Well, in 2007, we were doing that for the third time since this process began, and we spent about a year and created a new strategic plan that would be in place from 2007 to 2012. And that was shared at a board meeting in September and shared circulated across the campus and pretty wide publicly on September 14th, 2007. And in effect, would be our strategic plan. And each year we've produced a report card like this, although in past years it's been a more formal report and a little bit more glossy and circulated it far and wide. This year we deviated from that pattern. And I assume everybody has this or you've received it. What we did is we chose to be a little bit more low-key in our report card, and we've really prepared this document for the period ending July 1, 2008 to June 30, 2009, to reflect the statistical measures on all of the performance indicators in that current strategic plan. And you have this. I won't go through them all, but they're all here. Assessments. The one point that I would point out are the last couple of pages, because that's where things began to change. This plan in 2007 was predicated on some revenue assumptions, the financial aspect of the strategic plan. Pretty important. Well, The strategic plan was built on some revenue assumptions that included a 7% tuition increase each year for that five-year period, 2007 to 2012. It was based on a state appropriation increase of about $7 million, a like amount that a 7% tuition increase would produce each year for the 5 years. Around December of 2007, you will recall, the world's economy began to change, and we've been in a recession ever since. Since that time, we've had three budget cuts totaling $5.5 million. We've had no increase in state appropriations, aside from funding for the Academy for Math and Science and maybe some M&O on some buildings and early in that period since then, but not since. We've not had a base operating increase. So our state appropriation is not much different. Actually, it's significantly less. But just to put in context, our state appropriation 12 years ago was $65 million. It's about $73 million and change, $74 million now total, all things considered. Nine budget cuts and six increases in appropriations over that period of time. But in the last, since this report was released, we've had three budget cuts. Now, because of that, and because of the uncertainty of the coming biennium, we chose to statistically report on the strategic plan for the year ending June 30. And Dennis has been shepherding this strategic planning process for most of the recent years, and Doug McElroy has assumed those duties since Dennis has become the dean of University College and has transferred the strategic planning coordination element. So I'm not going to go through this, but you have the data. The financial assumptions, Ann has summarized how they have not come to pass for reasons way beyond our control. Bottom line is tuition, we were authorized to raise tuition 4% this last year in inflationary context that barely covered the cost of fixed cost increases for the campus. Coming into the current fiscal year, beginning July 1, 2009, the year we're halfway through right now, our state budget was reduced $5.4 million and replaced with stimulus money in the federal program that came to the states. And when you hear our leaders in Washington talk in terms of using the stimulus money to save or create jobs, we're in that save jobs category. Because the $5.4 million that the state reduced our budget by in recurring base funding to help meet the state's deficit and balance the state's budget was offset with the stimulus money, and it did save jobs. Because had we received that $5.4 million cut this year on top of the three we received since 2007, jobs would have been lost, faculty and staff. And therefore, we obviously... We're satisfied with Kentucky's strategy to use stimulus dollars to save jobs rather than use it to invest in new things or create jobs. That was the higher priority at the current time. That money goes away June 30, 2011, halfway through the coming biennium. So the state is wrestling right now with a biennial budget for the next 2 years, and the dynamics will be so different in the second year than the first year that it's likely that the state will focus much of its attention on the first year of the biennium. Statutorily required to pass a biennial budget, and they probably will, but my hunch is they'll be back this time next year reopening the budget and being more specific with the second year of the biennium, measuring economic dynamics at that time. But as Robin mentioned earlier, there's a big ominous red flag on the horizon. How will we displace the stimulus money that goes away, because that's a non-recurring source? And that's what the state is wrestling with as well. And unless a new revenue or an added revenue stream is identified to offset the loss of the stimulus money, we've got a serious problem looming out there in the second year of the biennium. So no one knows at this point how that's going to be addressed or how that displacement of that federal stimulus money will be achieved. Could be in additional stimulus dollars, although that is speculative at best at the federal level. So from my perspective, and trying to encourage our campus to stay focused on progress and to continue to move forward. And the absence of funding capacity and limited tuition capacity, it seemed imprudent to me to continue to press forward with a very specific strategic plan that had some pretty aggressive and ambitious intentions in it. Even though we've made pretty good progress on most of the things in here, to continue to press forward as though we're hitting on all cylinders and everything is terrific and let's be aggressive. And this was not the time to be having those expectations for 2,200 employees across this campus. Therefore, I chose to take the fall semester, meet with the faculty and all of our academic departments, and I did 57 of those meetings from 1st of September to mid-December. Did a lot of listening, took a lot of notes, and we talked about what are the campus's priorities. We also talked about what are you looking for in a chief academic officer as Dr. Birch returns to the classroom at the end of this fiscal year. And we talked about research. But mainly we talked about our strategic priorities as an institution so that I could learn firsthand from the faculty what the consensus what the consensus priorities are and be able to do that across disciplines, across colleges with our faculty. Spread all those notes out over the holidays, wrote a draft of a plan, came back in January, and it's not a strategic plan, it's a roadmap. It's more of a guide for the campus for these next couple of years to get through this period of time, to live within our means, to pare back a bit, go from the specific to the general, but have a roadmap for decisions as opportunities present themselves, like Navitas, that we could not have predicted a year ago, that Dean has delivered on. Or if we have to cut further, what our priority is going to be in that process as well. And the priorities will be the same whichever direction you're going. So I came back with what I sensed to be the consensus of our faculty and as brief a document as I could create. Met with our vice presidents, our administrative council, our executive officers, got feedback. Met with the college deans, got feedback. Met with our academic department heads and got feedback. Redrafted it, circulated it to all faculty and staff a week ago. Had a forum on Monday of this week. Got additional feedback, worked on it the night before last, was retyped yesterday, and that's what you have today. And it's this document with the big red draft on the top, and that's what this is. Again, I don't propose to go through this whole document, but I believe you've got a pretty good sense of the process we followed. But the priorities listed here, starting with academic quality in a very broad sense, and that's defined a lot of different ways. But in terms of priorities with our campus, what you see are the priorities reflected by our faculty and in general terms. And then there were some things that we needed to do as things have evolved, like getting clear consensus for University College and what it means and how we will go forward philosophically with a University College in a formal context. We will blend what has been our community college, it will be the Commonwealth School or other terminology that will be identified going forward within the university college structure as an interdisciplinary unit that we really haven't defined. So with our admission standards being what they are and with the clear consensus among our faculty that we begin to strengthen our admission standards, how does all that relate? I've tried to define that in here. And then we move into sustainability and efficiency and physical plant improvement as standalone categories. And I've attached some charts that relate to University College and the Commonwealth School and the admissions standards at the very low end, the bottom end of the admissions enrollment spectrum. And then finally, a resolution coming out of our sustainability committee on education for sustainability at WKU that our administrative council has approved. And I felt like it's pertinent if we're reshaping a planning process that needs to be factored in as an important part of our behavior going forward. So this is it's not a strategic plan by any means. It's quite the opposite. It's a guide, it's a roadmap, guide us through these next couple of years with all the uncertainty. And as we come out of the 2010 to 2012 biennium, we hope that economic conditions will be better. We hope the state funding will be stabilized. We hope that we'll have a better sense of latitudes with tuition. We hope that we continue to grow our applicant pool. We hope that we continue to grow our enrollment as a means of financial stability and psychological confidence in the institution. And then we can determine whether we return to a much more specific, much more absolute, much more measurable strategic planning process, perhaps from 2012 to 2017, and return to a pattern of absolute measurables and documenting performance as we look to the long term. So that's the philosophy behind why we're following a little different process now versus what has been the norm for the last 12 years and what will likely be the norm for the 10 or 12 to follow. But for the time being, we've got to be thoughtful about what it is we expect and what will guide us and be realistic. So that's may have sounded like a long summary of what this process entailed, but it's a process that we've devoted, to which we've devoted a lot of time and energy and thought and contemplation and listening over the last several months. I don't suggest this needs board approval because it's a guide. It's not, these are not things that would be absolute policy. I don't think there's anything in here that would surprise you, but if there's anything in here that you would like to seek clarification about or ask me to elaborate on, I would be happy to do so either now or at any point in time in the future. There will be a point in time in the days ahead when the draft would come off, and this would be our roadmap for the next couple of years, and we would move forward with it. So with that, I would turn it back to you, and you've had a chance to look through this and at least previous drafts, and would welcome input, clarification, conversation, and as we attempt to circulate the final version.
I want to compliment you on, first, you've got a process, and I know that's redundant because it's been in place for years, but you have one and you've kept it current. But secondly, the wisdom to look at it and realize that it needs to be revised as opposed to putting the blinders on and going straight ahead. So I commend you for the process, and under the circumstances, I was very, very well pleased and impressed with it.
I was going to make a comment. It just be that, you know, the faculty and the staff and administration have been so creative in trying to overcome some of these obstacles and face up to realities. So I think they're all to be commended. Programs like Navitas, I want to personally thank Dr. Dean Kaler for the tremendous effort that's gone into that. I think we owe him a deep vote of appreciation, a deep thank you. And also Dr. Burge.
I will say that Dean delivered that one.
It's incredible what that portends for the future. We don't know. We can't, you know, we're, but there's no cliche. You throw enough stuff on a wall, a lot of it sticks. And these are the things that we keep coming up with, or the administration here keeps coming up with, and with support of staff and faculty. And I think it's just incredible what you're doing in spite of some adverse situations. Again, I'd like to thank Dr. Kaler for all his good work. I'm amazed that you know, we're showing increases in almost every area when other schools are trying to hold their own.
Well, and I agree, and we have been we've been the fastest growing for 12 straight years in Kentucky. But there's a psychological variable there, and there's a financial stability variable. And having spent 9 days in China in the last couple of weeks, sometimes it's a numbers game, and sometimes it's about capacity. And right now, enrollment growth is our only means of financial stability and added capacity, provided we sustain the discipline to reinvest back into the faculty positions and added class sections to keep pace with that growth. We have been doing that. So my fear is one day we could find ourselves in decline, and I don't intend for that to happen. But it takes day-to-day diligence and professionalism and focus to ensure that you stay in a positive trend line, because as I told faculty and staff on Monday, enrollment management is not an exact science. It's part art and it's part science, but it's never exact. And you can't just say, we want it to be X. You're either going to be growing or you're going to be in decline. And to be in decline from an enrollment standpoint right now would be that would be the most devastating consequence for us at this time of decline in state funding and limited capacity with tuition. So we're going to continue to grow and do the things necessary and focus that growth on retention as the primary strategy. And that's a very good thing for our students.
Let me say...
Kevin had something
to say. Go ahead, Kevin.
The only thing I was going to bring up is a little bit what we talked about Monday with college preparedness at the forum. And I think we think similarly on this about just a little background is, for example, remediation and developmental education, something like 61% of WKU students are taking just, you know, even just one class in remediation. Sometimes that's just one class and then your gen ed requirement, you know, for math or English. And I think it might be worth if we can just put, you know, a clause or a sentence that just kind of says, you know, while protecting, you know, students who, you know, need just that one or two classes to graduate. Because we're graduating tons of students who take one English class in remediation, who are totally smart, totally capable of getting a college degree. But I think some of your focus here is to get the students who are taking two semesters of remediation and who aren't there and who shouldn't, you know, start here. So I just wanted to make sure we put a little verbiage to differentiate.
You are correct. We are on the same page as that in that regard.
And data supports that interpretation.
I just want to comment on Mr. Smiley's comment because I want to make sure we don't misrepresent fully. And I appreciate your comment, Kevin. But that 61% has been used several times, and I just want to clarify that there's a difference between students who take developmental remedial, which is pre-college work, and students who take supplemental, which is work for college credit. Supplemental is where you may meet 5 days a week instead of three, or you need a little extra help, and it's built into the course. And I think that 61% figure included the supplementals, and I just that could really be misinterpreted, and I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. Well, there's no question that the intent here is to begin a reasonable reduction of the investment in students that are struggling from a grade point average and an ACT score coming in, and we cannot be all things to all people. And as we improve our admission standards, strengthen our admission standards, we improve academic quality, we improve our retention, we improve our graduation rate, our degree productivity, and we're talking about dozens, not hundreds, of numbers here. But this is a move away from a complete open admissions philosophy to a more controlled admission and admitting students who demonstrate at least some capacity to be successful, measuring the heart as well.
I'm just going to applaud that effort. I think that Dr. Dennison and I were talking about that during the break, that, you know, if we're going to retain and graduate students, we need to make sure that we're bringing students in that can be successful.
Yes. And
at some point, you've got to start to draw the line and say, you know, this is somebody that needs to go to a community college or to a yes. technical college or something else, and then maybe at some later point try to come back here. But in the interest of elevating the overall quality of the student body you have and the programs you have, I think is something you have to do.
And our faculty are of a similar mind.
Oh, absolutely. And also, over time, helps deal with some of the staffing issues, because you don't have to have as many people on the front line for first-time entering freshmen for people who have no chance of being successful. So it really does fix multiple problems.
Let me say two things before we adjourn here. One, to reiterate what many of you said, compliment and thank Dr. Ransdale for his continued leadership over these last 12 years. And I can tell you, having been here a lot of years, this university wouldn't be where it is right now had it not been for his insight, his vision, and his leadership. So I continue to, not to embarrass him by saying that, but just thank him for his continued work. The other thing I'd like to say is I'd like to commend you people as on the board here. I can't tell you how much I enjoy all of you and the spirit of cooperation you all take and comments that all of you make from time to time, all in a good spirit. And I think we're very fortunate to have all of you, and I appreciate it so very much. Now, with that, we got committee meetings April 2nd, board meeting April 23rd, commencement May 14th and 15th. Am I leaving out anything, Mr. President?
Committee meetings are falling right in the middle of the NCAA Final Four.
That could be bad. Question may be there.
I'm going to assume that's a perspective as a board member, not the perspective where you personally plan to be. I hope our board gets to go to the Final Four.
Yeah. I'm sure if we are, we'll make adjustments.
Turn things around from the last week or so, but
we can reschedule.
Oh yeah. Yes.
One quick question: are we still planning to have the? Well, we hardly can call it a call board meeting anymore. The usual board meeting sometime in June to ratify the budget.
Yes, that would likely be on June 25. That'd be commencement's May. But yeah, that would be.
Okay, that's what I thought.
You've got April 2, and you got the April board meeting. But yeah, we will likely have a meeting on April. Excuse me, June 25.
Yeah. June 25th is the date that it's actually scheduled.
Or to approve the budget, and we just, with the General Assembly being a budget cycle, they will not adjourn, Robin, until the end of April, or mid-April at least, April 15th. So it'll take Ann and her staff some time to take what comes out of the General Assembly to assemble a budget, and so we'll have a call meeting on June 25. So go on, and if that date's not on your calendar, please put it there. Mr. Chair, I would like to express appreciation to the board for your flexibility. Those of you who live closer to Frankfort than Bowling Green, you got dealt a bad hand by a little more driving time than you'd planned on for this meeting, perhaps. But when the chair and I discussed the options for this board meeting with the advice of our university officers in an important discussion that we had a month or so ago, we determined that the prudence of not meeting in Frankfort at this point in time and going to the expense of doing so and the legislative reception and so forth was the more thoughtful course of action. I think that signal's been well received by our friends in Frankfort as well. So thank you all for your flexibility and keeping with the normal meeting place and routine. Final thing I'd leave you on is let me read a note to you from one of our forensics coaches who is kind of working as in a practicum in my office for the year. But here's a little recap over the weekend. He tells me on Monday morning of this week, we handed some pretty tremendous losses on the SEC this past weekend at a meet in Alabama where we defeated Alabama, LSU, Clemson, Florida, and Ole Miss. In that important forensics competition, we totaled 248 points, with the closest school being the University of Alabama with 90. He just wanted to share that one with me. So, Wood, top that one, buddy.
Yeah, he may have. So we don't play nice, is what you're saying.
Well, no, his last sentence is, we took less than half of our students to this tournament.
They didn't have their reserves.
No bench.
That's right.
All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
All right.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
Okay.
Great.